Johnny is Jim Lehrer's 19th novel. He is also the author of two memoirs and three plays and is the executive editor and anchor, of course, of the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer on PBS. Oh, Johnny tells us the story of a talented athlete, Johnny Wrigley, who firmly believes that someday he will play Major League Baseball. But on the way to his dreams, he finds his life unexpectedly taking a detour. And it's always a great pleasure to welcome Jim Lehrer to the program. Good morning, sir.
Hey, thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's always great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe.
So I was away for a couple of days. I was down in Florida watching spring training, and the book I brought with me on vacation was Oh, Johnny, and it was a perfect match.
It's just that's wonderful.
It's a perfect baseball match. Did you intend to write essentially, this book is a lot of things, but it is also a baseball story.
Yeah, it is a baseball story. I'm not a big believer in seeing baseball, you know, as great lessons or great parables for life or any of that. I think it's just a terrific game. I enjoyed playing it when I was a kid, and I enjoy watching it and all of that. I didn't set out per se to write a baseball novel. It's just my character. He just happened to be a kid who was a great baseball player. That's kind of how it happened. And then once you do that, and I loved, because I did love it so much as a kid, it was very easy for me to go back into the 40s, when that's when this book is set, and to go with my character into putting on the baseball uniform and the cleats and the mitt and hold the ball and do the whole nine yards.
Did you have those dreams of becoming the baseball star?
Absolutely. I was very specific. I wanted to play shortstop for the then Brooklyn Dodgers. It was a job held by a guy named Pee Wee Reese at the time. And Pee Wee didn't know I wanted his job and I was going to take it. But anyhow, I was 16, 17 years old, but I was nowhere near good enough baseball player. But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a pro. But anyhow, that didn't work out because the coach told me, forget that, Jimmy. I think you better think of something else. And so at any rate, that's when I kind of decided to at least think about being a sports writer. I think, my goodness, I could go be paid money and go to baseball games and football games and maybe write stories about them. And so that kind of got me into journalism. It was a big deal.
I was very interested in, as I said, this novel is many things, but for you, where did you get the initial idea of this kid, Johnny Wrigley?
Well, Johnny Wrigley, it was came to me. I grew up in Kansas and in Texas. In Kansas, Wichita, Kansas, that's where I was born, and when I was 10 years old, World War II was on. My dad used to take my brother and me to downtown Wichita to the train station because the troop trains would come through Wichita on the way to the west, to the west coast where they would go, where the troops were going to the Pacific. And we happened to be by there one Sunday, the troop train stopped. They let the troops out to kind of let their legs stretch and all of that. And there were young women there who would give them cigarettes and apples and that sort of thing. And anyhow, I remember, I was there to wave. It was all I was there to do, and that's all I did was to wave to the Marines who were up above us because there was an overpass where the tracks were. At any rate, that stuck in my head somehow, that memory. And just 2 or 3 years ago, I happened to be back in Wichita doing something entirely different and happened to be sitting in a restaurant across the street from that train station, which is still there. It's something else now, but the same situation was there. And I looked up there and I remembered that troop train. I remember my being there as a kid, and I remember those Marines who were there. And I thought, thinking, what if? And that's where it came from. And Johnny Wrigley was one of those Marines in my imagination, or at least he became that. And he was a baseball player, and he of course goes to the Pacific and has a horrendous war, but survives. And that's where it all started, though, is from my childhood experience.
Is that for you the fun part when you're sitting there and all of the questions like a torrent come to you? Well, what if this happens? What if that happened? What if this happens?
That's it. You got it. That's what it's all about. And because it is, because what's so glorious about it is that that's all I had going for me when I started. And out of that came the baseball thing. Out of that came the Pacific, World War II. Johnny becomes a flamethrower operator. and he is, which is the single most dangerous job there was for the Marines, for an enlisted Marine in World War II. He goes ashore at Peleliu, one of the single bloodiest battles in World War II. Most people don't know about another battle in Okinawa, and it just kept growing and growing and growing. And that growing, in other words, taking the story, taking my little character, my kid that I created, Johnny Wrigley, and taking him from place to place and from act to act and emotion to emotion. I mean, that is the glory of it all, Joe. That's why I do it. It's so much fun.
When you look at the parallels, though, of the fact that Johnny is a Marine and you were a Marine, and that you had a fascination with baseball and the Wichita connection and all of the parallels, does that make it easier to write because you're writing what you know?
You know, it does. I don't set out to do it that way, but that's just what happens. For instance, I don't want to, give the story away, but eventually Johnny becomes a ticket agent in a bus depot in Baltimore. Well, I was a bus ticket agent in a small town in Texas in the 1950s. So it keeps doing it. I think what happens, it isn't I set out to do it, it just happens naturally. You know, what is this kid going to do? Well, maybe he ought to work for a bus company. Well, I know how to do that. Well, maybe, that kind of thing. And once you get into it, at least once I get into it, then I really know, hey, I'm at home here. This is familiar territory. It's not that Johnny Wrigley couldn't end up being something else. I would have had to have researched it if I didn't know about it, but it just seemed like a natural act. Now, that may be because it was a natural act to me, so it's going to be that way to my kid invention, Johnny Wrigley.
Now, Johnny, of course, wants to go and play major ball, and the war gets in the way, but his baseball idol is Pistol Pete Reiser, and the minute I read that name on the page, I thought, I remember hearing him in my Catholic education. Wasn't he the guy who got the last rites on the baseball field?
Absolutely right.
He was
the ultimate hustle man at center field. I mean, he ran as hard as he could, and unfortunately, he would run so hard, and sometimes not paying attention to what he was doing, and he kept running into the center field wall at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, and in other walls at other fields in the National League where he played, and he was knocked out 11 times. I mean, knocked cold 11 times. And one time they really thought this was it for Pistol. They called him Pistol Pete. And they called him Pistol because he was like a shot when he would run for a line drive. Anyhow, they really did give him, they brought in a priest and gave him last rites because they thought this guy is, and he came to, and it is no question it shortened his career. And he was a most valuable player. He led the league in home runs, in stolen bases, and RBIs, runs batted in, 1 year. And then, of course, the more he ran into walls, and the more more effect it had on him physically, his output finally diminished, and his skills. He would have been a superhero. Everybody would have known who this guy was if he hadn't kept running into walls.
How aware were you of Pistol Pete prior to this? Because obviously Johnny's life follows Pistol Pete's rather closely.
Yeah. Well, that came. The only reason I knew about Pistol Pete, I went out here again when I was in Kansas. But this was before there was television, and only a little bit of radio coverage. And the only thing I knew about baseball was watching games and playing as a kid. But I knew about Pete Reiser because my dad gave me there used to be comic books that were life story, biographies of famous people, including famous baseball players, and my dad picked up a biographical comic book story of Pete Reiser and gave it to me, and he just became my hero. He was the only guy I knew about. And so he became my hero. But see, here again, Joe, it all came back to me when I, the 3 or 4 years ago when I'm sitting at this restaurant in Wichita. Well, sure, why not? If he's going to be a ball player, why not make him, pattern his life after Pete Reiser? So I knew something about him. And, you have touched on something I hadn't really picked up on, that these things have flowed naturally out of my own interest, my own life, more so than I had really realized.
Well, the name of the book is Oh, Johnny. It's published by Random House. Jim Lehrer is our guest, and we will continue our conversation after this short break.
Underwriting support for the Roundtable comes from Bread Alone Bakery, celebrating 26 years of serving organic whole grain breads and handmade pastries, breadalone.com. And Thomas E. Brockley, Senior Vice President Investments, UBS Financial Services Incorporated, Albany, New York, providing comprehensive wealth management services, professional investment management, and retirement plans, 800-255-3400.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Jim Lehrer is our guest. The name of the book is Oh, Johnny. It is published by Random House. You know, we're talking about the baseball connection. Of course, this is a story, a very much a war story and also a love story of Johnny Wrigley in search of the girl of his dreams that he met fleetingly. But there's also, I noticed, very much an O. Henry connection. What is your O. Henry connection?
Well, you got me again. When I was in high school, and when I had, after I'd made that decision that I was going to be a writer, I really got into O. Henry's short stories. I just loved reading his short stories. And then when I moved to, we moved to Texas, and I was then a junior in high school in San Antonio. O. Henry, William Sidney Porter. O. Henry, of course, was the pen name for William Sidney Porter,
right.
And he wrote, worked on a funny little newspaper in San Antonio, had, you know, not while I was there, years before that, and also in Austin. So I became even more interested in O. Henry and read all his stories and read a couple of biographies about him. So you got me again. I just kept following my own interests.
But I got the idea in reading the novel that you like that surprise ending. That was one of the things about O. Henry that got you.
That's right, absolutely. And of course, that's one of the reasons that nobody reads him much anymore or pays any attention to him anymore, because he was considered cheap. You know, he wrote hundreds, thousands of short stories, and he would write them, you know, one or two a day, and they'd publish them on a daily basis in some newspapers in New York, because he had a drinking problem, he had a money problem, he had all kinds of problems, and the only way he could make a living was to write these funny stories, and he always had a kicker, he always had a surprise at the end, and it became a cliche, the O. Henry stories. I think a lot of the quote critics, the English teacher critic types, have never given him his due because they saw his stories as gimmicks, but they were a lot more than that, at least in my humble opinion.
The wonderful thing about your novels, and as I mentioned, this is your 19th, is that, and I see this, you mentioned critics, I see this in reviews of your work, of calling you a relaxed storyteller. Is that something that you try for? Because it certainly does come across that way.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought of that. I hope that's true. I consider that a compliment. I love telling the stories. I love, and that's the first thing, you know, that's the one thing I did pick up at the very beginning when I first got interested in writing, started taking writing courses and all that sort of stuff years and years ago, was, first of all, tell a story. If you got a point you want to make, fine, but tell the story first and then worry about the point. Don't write a story to tell a point. Just tell a good story first. And so that has always been my mantra. Tell the story, tell the story, tell the story, tell the story. And I loved it. I love the term, Joe. I appreciate it that somebody would say that I'm a relaxed storyteller, because that's how I feel about it.
What about the balance of obviously you have a day job, and I know we've discussed this in the past I don't know if you consider the NewsHour to be the day job or the novel writing to be the day job, but they're obviously both important parts of your career. So that balance for you, you have to be comfortable with both.
Exactly right. And I think I'm fortunate in that I think one helps me be comfortable in the other. In other words, as a functioning journalist who's dealing with the facts, just the facts, ma'am, approach. I'm very much at ease about that because nobody has to worry about watching the news hour or listening to something I might say in terms of the news or asking somebody a question to say, try to find out deep, what do I think deep down inside about anything, political or otherwise. In other words, I do not reveal myself in my journalism. If there's anything I have to reveal about my soul or any of that sort of stuff, I can do that in my fiction writing. And they're very, very. I don't write. There's no politics. There's no anything political in any of my novels, any of my fiction writing. There's nothing there at all. But I'm very free, and I think being able to be free, if I did want to do something like that, I don't mean write about politics, but I mean I've written some stuff about politics, but I mean to give more than just the facts, which you do in fiction writing, because you're getting into somebody's to Johnny Wrigley's very being. That's a lot more than just a surface reporting situation. I am very comfortable because I can do both. And one, so I'd say, because I can do both and I'm comfortable doing both, one doesn't impinge on the other.
I mean, if you had your druthers, would you just be writing novels?
Oh, I think I'd be. I'm now so used to doing both. I think if I quit doing one of them, it would be difficult for me. But eventually, I'll probably have to make that decision. But right now, I don't, and I'm so happy I don't.
Yeah. Well, good, because we need you there. We need
okay.
you. We need you at the desk.
You got it.
You know, I was watching you the other night, and you were interviewing the president, and of course, you moderated one of the debates during the campaign season. How do you believe that? Did you see any change, any shift, any difference in the man from the time that he was on that stage while you were moderating the debate to when you were going one-on-one with him just a few days ago?
You know, not really. You know, I think that's one of the reasons he was successful in the election. I think he is consistently who he is, and he does not seem to change. His approach, his personality does not change. He's a very calm, collected human being. And that comes through. People may agree or disagree with his positions, agree or disagree with his words as he speaks them, but his approach to communicating, his approach to explaining what he does and what he believes is the same, whether he's standing on a debate stage or whether he is in an interview situation. That's been my experience thus far, at least.
Now, obviously, we're less than 100 days in, but the difference of a news organization like yours covering this president compared to the Bush administration, I mean, he has been so far very accessible. He's doing interviews regularly with you and was on 60 Minutes for a better part of the hour and had a, you know, doing the primetime news conferences and so forth. So do you feel that there is a greater accessibility and it is in some ways easier to cover what is going on?
You know, it's impossible to draw that kind of conclusion here. I think you always have to remember that each one of these presidents, like anybody else in public life, is a different individual, and they have different ways of approaching the way they communicate. And I don't see it's impossible to say, okay, at least it's impossible for me to say, well, I can tell you the differences. I mean, because anybody can see that. But I don't see between, say, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, yes, George W. Bush gave fewer news conferences, fewer interviews, all of that. What does that mean? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I think that's all in the eye of the beholder about not so much about the way somebody communicates, but it really has to, in the final analysis, is what he or she communicates about. And that's what this will always be about.
Yeah, and I guess my question was a clumsy way of asking, is increased access and more information better for the news organization and ultimately better for informing the people?
Well, as a general premise, yes. I mean, the more information anybody has before they cast a vote or form an opinion about some public issue, the better off they're going to be. And you just have to hope and pray that the information is correct, and that it's not spun. And that's the journalist's job to make sure of both. And but yes, as a general premise, the more information that's out there, the better off we all are.
When you look at the NewsHour and how it has evolved over time, are you still very pleased in the direction that it is going and the service that it provides, which is very rare in the world of television news?
I'm very pleased with what we're doing. I'm very proud of what we're doing. I think actually, in a strange way, our time has come once again. Because newspapers all around us are having their problems financially, and the end result is being less and less serious reporting, and the same is happening in television, some parts of television, and I think the need for serious people who are doing serious journalism has never been greater, and that's what we do in the NewsHour, and we always need to be alert to better ways of doing it. And to improve our techniques, and to innovate, and to explore with the new term platforms. It doesn't always have to be appointment television. We now have huge online operation, and you could watch the NewsHour just about any time you want to. Appointment, the traditional appointment television, is no longer the sole thing we do anymore. But the same journalism we'll always do, and I think there's more of a need for us now than there's ever been, and that's a good thing. And for us, bad for some of the other folks who are doing journalism right now, but good for us.
You know, it's interesting in watching the program because there are all of the elements that are out there in many other especially 24-hour news organizations, but you just do it different. And you look like something like the McLaughlin Report, where you get a bunch of people together and they're all screaming at each other. And then you have your, for want of a better term, your talking heads of Shields and Brooks, Mark Shields and David Brooks, and you sit down and they have a very reasoned conversation that you moderate. That is by design, correct? You want
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. That's what we sit down to do.
To just have a conversation and not
have a conversation. Exactly. Absolutely right.
Yeah. And even though you can see that the two men are very passionate in how they believe, and by the way, you always seem like you're just having a ball.
Oh, I love it. I love every minute of it.
Because it's just talking politics.
You got it. You bet. And talking with two people that I truly respect. And they're fun people, and they both have senses of humor as well. And no, it's a real pleasure. I look forward to every Friday.
Well, the 19th novel, Oh Johnny, is out. I assume there will be a 20th.
You bet. You bet there will. Another year. I've got another one that's already pretty much finished, and it'll be out in another year or so.
Well, I hope you will join us to talk about that one. In the meantime,
you got it.
People can pick up Oh Johnny. It is published by Random House. Jim Blair, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Again, the name of the novel is Oh Johnny. It is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.